Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Brad.
Hey, it's James. We decided to start a podcast about subjects that spark conversations between us.
We're not professionals and we don't claim to be, but we will look to get some guests on each week who can shed some light on these areas.
Ultimately, we wanted to have an open conversation and hear the thoughts of everyone else about these subjects.
And hopefully you guys can learn as we do.
This is How Little We Know.
Hello and welcome to How Little We Know. My name is James.
Hello, I am Brad.
And we are one half of the band The Vamps. Now, a little bit about us. We are two guys in our 20s. We live in England, and most of the time we're writing songs and touring with the band The Vamps.
Yes, yes, yes. A little insight as to what you've tuned into, what you've signed up for. How Little We Know is a podcast that me and James decided to start because between us we have a lot of conversations about subjects that maybe we're not the best informed about, but they are subjects that I think apply to everyone and conversations that people will be having, especially at our age, but all types of people, and they're subjects that we'd like to know more about. So it's essentially a conversation between me and James to open up to you guys to discuss and debate and to hopefully raise awareness about amongst all of us. So throughout the series we're looking to get guests on who can shed some light on areas that most of us probably don't know that much about, and we can look to learn together. So it's a very much an open debate.
Definitely. And I guess, yeah, the reason why is because, as Brad was saying, we chat a lot between, you know, ourselves and the band. Wherever we are in the world, we tend to have, you know, a glass of red wine, mm-hmm. and end up talking for hours about most of the time pointless things. However, we feel that sometimes we stumble upon issues that may genuinely have a little bit of importance as opposed to, I don't know, Call of Duty.
Yeah.
So this podcast is just something where we want to have a leisurely conversation, no expectation as such, but hope that we can learn with you guys at home about issues that are topical and yeah, important in society.
Yes.
So with that in mind, we thought that the first episode that we thought we'd start on is kind of social media, and we've mm-hmm. separated this first episode into three chapters, haven't we, Brad?
We have, yeah. And this is very much, before we go on, this is very much an introductory episode. So, like I said before, throughout the podcast, we want to hear what you guys have to say. We want to hear your opinions. We want to take your questions. And we want to know how you feel about these subjects. So this first episode isn't interactive whatsoever because we kind of wanted to let you know what you're getting in for. If you want to tune out, do it now.
If you want to unsubscribe, it's gonna be bad. Yeah. 5-star, but then unsubscribe, please.
But this is literally just us skimming over a couple of subjects within social media. It's a huge conversation social media is, but we've kind of picked out three subjects that we want to have a chat about and skim over. And then at the end of the episode, and once you guys have listened, you can give us your feedback, give us your thoughts, and then we can go in a bit more individually about the subjects and speak with you guys, whether it's having a call, whether it's taking an email, or whether
That'd be good. Getting someone on.
Yeah, yeah. And we can actually really go in depth on these subjects. But for now, the three chapters, you could say, within this podcast we're going to look at is: how has social media changed social interaction and relationships? Try saying that after a few glasses of red.
And then we've got expectations versus reality. And I'm hoping that Dean Sherwood, the man, is going to edit in a picture now of Connor on Halloween 2014, Jared party, expectation versus reality. And then the last one is accessibility and censorship.
Yes.
So there's three topics there that, as Brad said, we're going to sort of dip our toes into. And then if you want us to, we'll do a full episode on each of them in later weeks.
Let's do it.
Chapter one.
Yes. How has social media changed social interaction and relationships?
So we're very lucky boys, and the Vamps kind of accumulatively over our personal platforms and the band, I think we've got about 10 million followers. So the first question is why? I don't think we could address that in a podcast.
Idea.
It would take weeks to do that. But we thought, you know, a great many of those people tweet in and, you know, send us messages and in person, you know, they say that they really feel like they know us and have a genuine connection through their experience with us on social media. So, I mean, like, how do you feel about that? If, you know, someone coming up to you in a meet and greet and saying, Brad, like, I know all X, Y, and Z about you because I saw this on Instagram, you know, I really feel like I know you. How, your immediate reaction, what is that? Do you feel that people know you from what you very rarely post on Twitter?
Firstly, yeah, I post about 2 times every 6 months, so I'd be very impressed if they know that much about me off my Twitter, because it's just non-existent. I don't really know how I feel. I think it's weird, like, I personally very much like to separate my personal life and my public, like, social media life. Mm. I don't really know why I find it easier to deal with, to compartmentalise the two. But, so that's why sometimes I find it hard. It's not that I portray myself differently on social media. I'm very much the same person. Mm. It's just what I do in my private life. I try to keep that a private life. Mm. But when people come up and they say, you know you, it's nice, because, and I think social media is amazing for that, because there's people who look up to so many people, or, like, I know I've got big idols within music that I look up to, and I can go onto their Twitter and I feel like I've got, I'm viewing a part of them, and that as a fan, from a fan perspective, is awesome, so it's nice that they can come up and do that.
Mm.
But on the other side of it, I think it's quite scary thinking that people can find out so much about you, and it doesn't feel intrusive per se, but it is a part of your life that you very much want to, for me, keep private.
Yeah.
And if these people feel like they know that about me, I don't know how I feel about it, really. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think for me it's very difficult, isn't it? Because people saying that they genuinely feel that they know you, they know that little glimpse of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and actually, it's interesting, you know, like, asking you, say you post, like, once a month, I don't know. Do you feel like, do you know anyone solely on social media, you personally, just from speaking to someone on social media, do you feel that you know someone that you've never met, that you follow on a channel, you know, I really know them for that person? And, like, you know, because obviously you don't post that much.
So it'd be hard
for people. So I'm wondering,
it'd be
interesting.
Yeah. I think it does entirely depend on what that person puts out, and that's the beauty of it, is people can know as much as you want them to know about you, unless you've got, like, stuff that has been, like, say if you're a celebrity and there's been stories going on about you, then people are getting an insight via that. But if you're just on social media and you're in charge of your account, people can only know as much as
you
want them
that,
to know, which is great in a way, but people can put out whatever they want, you know what I mean? They could portray someone who is entirely different to their actual person.
So
I think, like, there's people who I follow who I find, like, there's a couple of artists when I was growing up who I used to, like, this guy called Lewis Watson, who's an acoustic artist.
Big up Lewis,
Big up Lewis, you're great. But he's got a very, like, certain style of, like, the way he uses social media accounts. And then you meet him in person and he's the same guy who depicts the way he is online. And that, when I was growing up, is when I was, like, viewing people and I was like, oh, they're cool, I'll check them out. And I was a bit more impressionable, and I was like, so I felt like I kind of got a glimpse into who he was via him tweeting about his covers and stuff. Whereas for someone like me who doesn't tweet that much, it's probably harder for people to find out.
I'm just trying to think now, you know, I would say, you know, like, through the band, we speak to a lot of people solely on social media. So, like, for example, I've never met Alex from the Chainsmokers, but my sole method of communication with him is like texting or liking each other's Instagram or commenting saying he's got a lovely golden retriever.
Yeah.
So it's...
He has got a lovely
golden retriever.
He does,
it's great.
Yeah.
Very, very lovely. And it's... And it's kind of, it led me to think about, you know, I feel that I really like Alex and I would hope that he classes me as a friend because I do for him too. But
yeah.
It made me think about thinking, you know, a lot of the relationships nowadays are solely based around social media. So people don't really actually speak anymore.
No.
And then that led me to think, is kind of the image you portray online, is that different to how it would be in person? So if you think about when you, MSN Messenger, back in the day,
yes.
You know, I slayed on that. And it's like, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, I had time to think about what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't like that, I would like delete it, start again. So every single statement I made was calculated. And I kind of removed that sense of, yeah, I removed that sense of like acting impulsively.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder whether...
It's almost like, if you're thinking about each decision and each thing you say that much, is it a true representation of who you are?
Mm.
Because it's, like you say, it's not an impulsive thought and it's not the first thing that's come into your head.
Yeah.
So I think, like, going back to what you said, are people you meet via social media, is it a true depiction of who they are? Mm. Are you building a real friendship? Is it a real relationship?
And is it a true depiction of who you are? Because I know full well that when I was a bit younger, when I was 17, 18, the image I portrayed online of who I was very different to who I really was. Like, mm-hmm. I acted confident. I said things that I would never dream of saying in real life. And even in the band, you know, I'm quite dry humoured as a person. I'm quite sarcastic. I'm quite...
He is.
And it comes across as rude a lot of the time. And I think a lot of people, fans and people have come up to me and have said, like, and actually I was speaking to Dean before and he said, you know, a girl came up to him the other day and said, I thought you'd be like more rude in real life. But that's because how she was reading his tweets.
Yeah.
And I think when you're online, you immediately, you lose all sense of sarcasm.
But it's body language. Body language is how you
so
read
important.
People. Yeah. And it's very true that, and that's part of the reason, like, I you know how bad I am. For people who don't know, who are tuning in, who don't know anything about the Vamps. Me and James met via social media, so it's been an integral part of us from day one. And I'm just really bad at using it. I'm bad at texting, I'm bad at tweeting, I'm bad at Instagram.
Do you reckon that is? Why are you not into it? Because I'm the polar opposite.
Yeah, so. You're very good at using it. And I think it's because, for me, I'm 22 now, and I grew up and I wasn't like glued to my phone because my phone wasn't an iPhone. It had Snake on, which it was a great game. But it wasn't so, like, people didn't need to be on the phones when I was like 13. Like, we'd play out, we'd go and have genuine interaction.
Yeah.
So as I've grown up and I've had that as, like, when I was building relationships and friendships, it was solely based on a face-to-face interaction. So for me, whenever I speak to people via text, like, usually I'll call people, for example.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I if someone texts me about something, I can't be asked to text them. I'll ring them and I'll speak to them about it over a text because, for me, it's a truer... I can get a truer indication of what that person's trying to say.
And you can hear...
I can hear
the upwards inflections.
Inflections on their voice.
Yeah.
And if you can have a... That person's, like you say, not thinking about their text for 5 minutes before they send it to me, so I can have an actual conversation with them. Twitter, I'm just lazy. I just don't use that. But, like, texting and stuff, I genuinely prefer having a conversation with someone because I'm getting a truer representation of what they mean.
That's good.
Over a phone call.
Yeah, because you imagine, like, I almost feel like sometimes when you're on social media, because it can be so orchestrated sometimes, my tweets, my Instagram, like, how long do I know that people listening, they'll spend ages finding out that perfect tweet to say or perfect
the caption.
Thing. Or, yeah, caption. It's so important. But it's almost like you freeze time and it's like, I was speaking to Dean again before and it's like, you imagine that in real life, if you have the ability, if we're speaking now, for me to just pause it and be like, think about what I
want to say.
It's almost like we build ourselves into being something that we're not, which is what you were saying. Which I find that interesting in itself. But I also, like, ask whether people almost, like, hide behind their phones. Like, it's like an invisible kind of protective curtain, I guess, that can hide insecurities and impurities, and whether that's a good thing or not, you know, who knows? But it's almost like, I was thinking before, it's almost like social media can be like a natural selection process almost, because you... you yourself say, you know, like, I don't like this about myself. I'm not going to say that on social media. So everything that you put on social media is like the best of you.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. I wonder whether it kind of has a negative effect on how we view ourselves as people, because we immediately remove the negativity in our lives to portray that kind of perfect
thing. So it's almost like what your social media account is your ideal image of yourself
that
you're putting out there without the, you're trimming the fat, so
to speak,
put out your best version of yourself. And then, like you say, is that, and then the people you meet through that, how are you to verify why they like you? And we were speaking earlier about like relationships that have formed off the back of like social media. And I was out the other day, I just went for some food with some friends, and we looked across, and like none of my mates really use the phone that much, like, especially when we're out for food, we just like have a chat.
Yeah.
And there was a couple who were sat across from us, and we were all like, they literally haven't said a word to each other. Mm. They've both been sat on the phones, they ate the food, probably Instagram the food.
Taking a selfie. Amazing then, conversation. Yeah.
And we were saying, there's like couples that we know that will literally, you see them in person and they don't get on, they don't speak.
No.
But if you were to go on their Instagram, it'd be like they're the best.
Yeah.
They're the best couple you've ever seen.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's like, are they, is the reason that those kind of people are together because of the people that they saw on Instagram is different to the people that they actually met in person? And it's such a funny...
It's a weird one, isn't it? But at the same time, we were again speaking before, and like, I think that social media offers an outlet for those who perhaps are slightly underconfident in real life situations. You know, if you say you're isolated in school because you don't really fit in, there are people online that you can connect with, and you don't have to muster up the courage in the same way online as you do in person. So,
but like confidence that you gain through social media could then leak into your actual life, and then people will see it and like, oh, she started to become really confident, he started to come out of the shell a bit more, because you've had this reinforcement of positivity online and you've met someone online who you both get on. So then that is an amazing thing, I think. And another benefit of social media is that friendships, like through our band,
that's what I was going to say, it's like you can put something on, say a girl that perhaps doesn't really fit into a group at school says, oh, I like the Vamps on her Twitter.
God knows why.
Yeah, help that girl. But then like someone from within a year at school that's never spoken to her could have seen that and been like, I like the Vamps too.
Yeah.
God, that's two of you. Help you both. But there's ways that social media can actually have positive effects with regards to friendship in real life, I think. So it's important to look at that. But I think it might be interesting to move on to chapter number 2 at this rate.
Yes.
So let's take a quick break.
What's up, everyone? We hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Feel free to get involved.
Tweet us on @howlittlewenow and we'll try and include you in next week's episode. Let's get back to it. Chapter 2. If you are enjoying the podcast so far, remember to drop us a tweet @howlittlewenow on Twitter. And again, we'll be going back into these subjects at a later date in more depth, and we'll be including your guys' thoughts and opinions. So, chapter 2, the subject is expectations versus reality.
Picture again, just for you guys. It's my favourite picture of all time.
The best. If you're ever feeling down, look at that photo.
And the best thing is, like, I don't think Connor liked it when we laughed, because he thought he looked the bomb. And
from my memory of the night, it did look amazing. That was the thing.
Oh, God. So, yeah, as Barbara was just saying, you know, we briefly chatted about, you know, you always know those people that sat there on their phones not talking. And it's kind of like, I was thinking, that fear of missing out, or FOMO for a variation.
FOMO is an actual thing now, isn't it, FOMO, yeah.
I heard this the other day on a radio station that I listened to, and I'd never heard of it before, but it's becoming more and more real, isn't it? I think there is a genuine fear of missing out of stuff, and it's not even anything. I'm guilty of it. I will spend, like even this morning, someone had a go at me. I was sat there on my phone just flicking through my feed, whilst someone was trying to have a conversation with me.
Yeah.
I was like, why am I doing this? Yeah. What am I doing? And I don't know what I was doing, but it becomes an addictive habit that's going over and over. And I think that it genuinely has an effect on people. I don't think it's just me. I think it is a genuine thing, isn't it? You're very lucky that it doesn't seem to...
I know I seem quite detached from my phone, but I still do get it. And I think it's very much, like you say, a consequence of people being so attached to their phone. And I'll try and think back to when I was like 12 and like my generation, my mates, we weren't glued to our phone. Mm. Was FOMO a thing? Was it like
absolutely
that?
Absolutely not.
I don't know if it wasn't.
You know, it might have been like you had to watch Coronation Street to make sure that, you know, Kevin didn't die or something. And it's like, and that's what it was then.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, watching TV back then for us growing up, I mean, we sound like, what, 60? Do you? I mean, like, you know.
I know, but we're trying not to sound like 80-year-old men here. But
back then, it was, you'd watch the episode, you'd feel something, an emotion, cool. You turn off the TV, you go to bed, play some PlayStation, whatever, read a book, God, I don't know. And then you'd sleep, and that'd be it. But I think it's changed now, and there's a statistic here that I wrote down before that proves that this kind of FOMO and constant desire to be on social media is genuinely having an effect on our youth of today, and we're in this age bracket. Yeah. So I'll just read this out here. So the Royal Society for Public Health, RSPH for short, and also the Youth Health Movement, YHM
for short,
they conducted a survey of 1,500 people aged between 14 and 24 in the UK. Now, the survey asked them to score how each of the social media platforms they use impacts among 14 health and well-being related issues, which were identified by experts as being the most significant. Now, the results are quite interesting. So YouTube tops the table as being the most positive, whilst Instagram and Snapchat are coming out as being actually the most detrimental to young people's mental health and well-being. So before we go into that, that's scientific proof that this is a real thing.
It's having an effect.
It's having an effect, and it's having an effect that, you know, we didn't know 7 years ago. So that's crazy. But why do you think that firstly, why do you think that Instagram and Snapchat are in that region of the chart as opposed to ones like YouTube? What do you reckon the difference is?
Well, James asked this question to me, but also to you guys. So
yeah,
let us know what you think and why you think it is. My first like reaction to it is Instagram and Snapchat, amazing platforms, but they're very much like snapshots and very little insights into people's lives.
Mm.
So you're getting a 15-second clip on Snapchat, a photo on Instagram. And because of the instantaneous nature and the like, how little of it you're seeing, you can kind of put anything on there and it can be portrayed. So like if you're going through a full Instagram,
they
are just snapshots into someone's life and they're just photos, they're just little 15-second clips, tweets, but tiny moments. So I think the detrimental nature of that is that people are portraying something that isn't achievable on there. So you're seeing 0.1 second of someone's day throughout a 24-hour day. YouTube, I think, is... because of vlogging, for example, like I've never watched that many vlogs, but I know you were doing it for a bit. And I think you're getting an insight in someone's life that's a bit more representative, truly. So people are watching that and they're going, oh, like, he's had an interaction there with someone and, like, maybe he's tripped up there. You're just getting a more, like, true representation. So people are, like, taking away from that. Oh, I do that sometimes.
Mm.
Rather than viewing a model on Instagram that's got the perceived perfect body or an absolute hench bodybuilder. So that can be the things that kind of demoralise people. I know I look on there and I'm like, Jesus, I need to be, like, 6 foot. I'm only 5'7". I'm only little. But, like, that, I think, because it's just such a small moment, it can be quite demotivating for people, and people can be like, oh, I'm just going to give up now. Like, I'm not even going to try and go to the gym because I'll never get that.
Yeah, and also the YouTube, I suppose you're adding in those things that we were saying were lacking in the first chapter. So you can hear when someone's sarcastic.
You know,
you can hear kind of the upwards inflection. You know, you can
see their body language.
See their body language and you can hear emotion. So perhaps that's why, you know, you get longer with people on YouTube than perhaps Instagram, and you can't really, you know, apart from like makeup and stuff, you can't really touch up and edit a picture, you know, you can't edit a whole video like that. So perhaps that's why.
You know what's interesting as well that I just thought about as well is that a lot of these I was speaking to my mother about it two nights ago, and we were speaking about vlogging, and I know that like my sister follows a few vloggers, and like people that we know who we're speaking about follow a few vloggers, and I was saying how that like we're friends with vloggers.
Oh,
we're
we're
friends with people who are big on Instagram and Snapchat and blah blah blah. And what the people who we're very lucky that we get an insight into that industry, because it can open up kind of like the behind the scenes of it. But to people who don't know about that, that one Instagram photo you see, that one 15-second Snapchat that you see, they've done about 50 takes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They've done so many takes to get that right and to get the image that they want across of them. And so this is going back to the expectation versus reality. That isn't just a candid photo that they've taken on a beach that's work for them.
Yeah.
That's how they're earning their income. And that's like, I've got to work and make this video as good as it can be. So where it can demoralize some people, you've got to realize that this isn't just how people are. This is someone working to make a video or an Instagram photo or a Snapchat video as good as it can be. So that when you watch it, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But that's not their actual
Exactly. Like we've had people that have come up to me and said, oh, you're so tall. I didn't think you'd be that tall. Or I've even
had, had that for me.
I remember when I was like 17 and I thought I had absolutely made it. It was before the band, and I paid like 100 quid to a professional photo shoot, and I was like, gonna get it touched up.
I remember that photo.
Badass. I had an amplifier, I had a checker. I was like, I've made it. I've literally made it. And I remember I went to a house party on New Year's Eve and I was like, I'm a rock star. MySpace was through the roof. You know what I mean? And a girl came up to me and she was like, you look nothing like you do in your pictures. And I remember it hit me like a bloody train. I was like, but you know, like, now looking back, it's just like, I get that, because I was so like, I loved the photo shoot because I was like, that's got all the best lighting.
Yeah.
And that's just not real. But you know, whilst we're speaking about that side of thing and like the psychological effect of expectation versus reality on social media platforms, I think it's really important to briefly look at physical health too. Now, Brad and I aren't trained or qualified in this area at all. So I went on Google and I just looked at a couple of reports. And there's one here that particularly kind of like sparks a bit of interest in me. So in 2011, there was a study from the University of Haifa. They examined 248 young women from the ages of 12 to 19. So, you know, similar sort of age to where we are, but female. And they found that the more exposure to social media, they found that more exposures to social media contributed to higher rates of eating disorders and related concerns. Specifically, the more time these young women spent on Facebook, the more likely they were to struggle with bulimia, anorexia, physical dissatisfaction, negative physical self-image, negative approach to eating, and more of an urge to be on a weight loss diet. So, that indicates that to a lot of, you know, they examined nearly 250 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in that, their use of social media encouraged them.
So there's a
positive correlation between the amount of looking on social media to these illnesses.
Yeah.
And that's quite scary, actually, you know, I do it all the time. I flick through Instagram aimlessly, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? You know, we're all always looking through. We're always there. But the reality is that if we're not conscious of this, then it can lead to things. You know, these social media platforms are platforms of aspiration and achievement to many people. And I think it's important for us to recognise, as we were just saying, that everything people see on there is not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I was friends with a girl a few years ago now who was an Instagram
model.
I don't know, you know. And when I first saw her on Instagram, I was like, wow, like, awesome. This is great. This is perfect. You know, I was into fitness. She was into fitness. Great. We're compatible. Awesome. But, you know, she quickly told me that, like, the pressure to adhere to that perfect Instagram goals physique and those pictures and the lighting and being on the beach and in a bikini and, you know, she said that that just wasn't her. She was like, I literally lie. I put a mask on to be this person. So, you know, these girls and guys are looking at these accounts thinking, this is achievable. This is easy. This is, you know, the dream. That person wants to be that. I want to be that too. They aspire to replicate the path that they've taken. And I think it's so important for us to recognise that, especially when, like, these illnesses, you know, bulimia or anorexia, like, there's a positive correlation between them. It's important to recognise that the goals they're striving to achieve, the people that are portraying those goals and desires, them themselves can't are against be, it, yeah. and they can't achieve it.
Yeah.
It's a lie to a lot of those people.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's something that's generally accepted between us. I do it. I'm all the time looking at fitness accounts thinking, I wish I looked like that guy.
Well, the reality is everyone does it because, like, going back to what we said, everyone puts up in their head the best version of themselves on social media. So you can't begrudge these Instagram accounts for doing it because people who don't have any followers do it as well. Everyone does it. But it's the influence that those accounts have over people. So it's the fact that, like you say, these kids, it's leading 248 young women onto bulimia, anorexia, physical dissatisfaction. Like, that's the reality of it. So it's more kind of like the accounts that have influence. It's about making sure that their depiction is a true and achievable one.
Yeah.
Because some people nowadays are taking verified accounts on whatever platform it is as their gospel.
No, basis
That's like, I'm going to... Like, I did a... This is random, but, like, there's a guy I follow on Instagram who's does workouts. I did my workout off the back of one of his workouts.
Yeah.
Because I thought, he's in good shape, he's done that workout, I'll follow that. But how am I to know if he's a qualified trainer? If the reality is I don't.
He might have done steroids for 6 months.
Exactly. But I'm following his workout in the hope that I'm going to end up looking like him. Not really, but that's what some people, that's what they put together in their minds. I think, he looks like that, he's put up a video like that, if I follow it, it'll happen. Yeah. And it's not...
Six pack in 3 seconds.
I mean...
But then again, right, just... Side point, I've just thought about that. There are genuine times where that can be beneficial. So it's almost like an escapism. We were speaking again before. A lot of people use social media to go through Instagram and think, right, that guy's got, for example, a Ferrari. His Instagram says he got that Ferrari by going to university or whatever, or setting up his own business, working every day for years. Look, this is a video where he talks about, this is my time at uni, blah, 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 or, you know, I set up this business on the market on a Sunday. And it shows that progression, and it shows that if you do this, you can strive to achieve this if you work hard. Or, putting it into your context, you know, I was very lucky to be on the Teen Awards panel. There's a lovely guy called Harrison, who his whole Instagram is his transition from... kind of not really knowing too much about health and fitness to kind of applying that to his life. So his whole channel is about eating healthy, but achievably healthy.
Right.
And, you know, working out. And so I think there's a way of doing it, you know. Social media can be inspirational and productive in some instances, you know.
A lot. I think we speak about, like, it might feel like we spoke about the negatives, but there's so 100%. Many upsides to it. And there's, like you say, leading on from what you said, there is accounts that are truly representative of, if you put in this work, and you will get this out of it. And young kids, like you say, are looking at social media as a new information stream. And if they're getting the right information, that's achievable, then it's such a positive influence. But it's just about finding the right channels that are influencing the kids in the right way. And there's, like, we were speaking about the vloggers earlier, there's some vloggers that I know that are, and you know, that are very much themselves online, and they're the guys that we've met and we've thought, you know what, actually you are who you are online. And there's some people that are putting out the right image, but it's just about sieving through the accounts that are leading people into the thought that they can achieve that off a 2-week workout.
You're
exploiting that generation that's so invested in social media.
Yeah, definitely. Chapter 3, accessibility and censorship. Now, carrying on from what Brad was saying about how a lot of people nowadays kind of are basing everything around what they're learning on social media. I thought it'd be interesting to just see like the extent of how many phones there are in the world. Because when we were younger, you know, we got a phone when we were maybe 14 and that was it. So I had a little bit of a Google, and according to the GSMA Intelligence, there are now 7.19 billion gadgets in the world, and that is more gadgets in the world than there are people. Now, that's crazy, isn't it? Because, you know, when we were 11, 12, 13, there was perhaps one computer, two if you were very lucky, in the house that was on a dial-up connection, which meant that you couldn't go on the internet when your mum was on the phone. And, you know, you played Space Invaders, Pac-Man, and then...
RuneScape.
You had RuneScape?
I had RuneScape, yeah. Well, me and my mate, Ryan. Big up, Ryan.
3 years ahead of me. I didn't even have... I had Pac-Man when I was about 7, 8.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, what, were you 7, 8?
Well, I don't know. That's all varies. But I mean, that... Just in itself, you know, we're talking about a couple of games here. If we fast forward to where we are now, you know, 7 billion devices. According to the RSPCC, 1 in 3 internet users are children now. So it's obvious that there's a hell of a lot more devices that are accessible to people. You can get a smartphone for, what, 50 quid yeah. nowadays? It's got to a point where technology and social media is arguably unavoidable for people. How old were you when you got your phone? Like 12, like
I was
14?
Probably 12, 13, and I got a phone that you could text on if your fingers were minute, because they had tiny little buttons, and then it had Snake on. And it was literally the only reason. I mean, you'd have to do pay-as-you-go contracts,
oh,
so you'd be monitoring every text
get,
that you sent.
Yeah,
yeah.
10 quid token.
Yeah, and it was like, you'd only text to find out if your mate was at the co-op so you could go and meet him. But like you say, you've gone from... I think what's really crazy is the fact that everything that we spoke about having 3 games on your computer yeah. and it being in the dining room and your parents giving you an hour a night to play on it, within 7 years. Like yeah. it's how quickly it's changed, yeah. which is amazing in so many ways that we've spoke about, but it's just, it's hard to keep up. And even us, like 22, 24, mm-hmm. like, I feel out of the loop at times. Like,
yeah.
there's new apps that come up, and like there's bands that we know who are a bit younger than us who say, oh, we've just been getting like hits on this. And I'm like, I literally
yeah.
don't know what
new
that app
club.
Is.
Yeah, smash
yeah.
it.
Good lads.
Like, and even though we're only, what, 5 or 6 years older, it's almost like the world changes every
so quickly,
every new
yeah.
time a phone comes out. Carry on. Sorry, you're going to say something.
I'll
give you another
on.
Statistic, because
yeah,
this one is actually kind of crazy. So after we figured out there was, 7 billion devices in the world, I kind of carried on. I was thinking, well, there's 7 billion devices, but what does that mean with regards to children? Because obviously we were saying we were, what, 12, 13, phone that had 2 games, text. You had about 4 texts a week because you couldn't afford the thing.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, what have kids got nowadays? So according to the 2010 survey by Kaiser Family Foundation, twice as many children have cell phones now as when, you know, it was 2004.
Yeah.
So 2004 was probably when we were getting our phones-ish, maybe
yeah,
slightly
yeah,
before.
Feel, yeah.
So that's doubled in that amount of time. And 85% of those aged 14 to 17 have cell phones. So 85%. So when I was 14, I was one of the lucky ones out of my friendship group. Most of my friends didn't have a phone. It's completely turned on its head at that age. But what gets kind of slightly more interesting is when you kind of go to the younger ages. So 69% of 11 to 14 year olds have phones. And this one is the craziest, I think. Mm. 31%, so almost a third of children aged 8 to 10 have mobile phones.
Which
that's not just like a Snake phone. That could be an iPhone.
It's a computer,
you know?
In your hand, basically.
Yeah.
But as well, in addition to that, you've got... When we were younger, if you didn't have the latest Beyblade...
Mm. Oh, dude!
You may as well have just stayed in the lunch hall, but and you'd be like ostracized from the group because you
yeah.
haven't got the Beyblade Arena and you can't complete.
Yeah, oh, dude.
But now it's like if you haven't got the newest iPhone and you're not and you weren't in the latest like Facebook group, and you weren't chatting on the latest message.
You didn't know
like,
about the party on the weekend because you weren't on the group.
You're just completely left behind. So then you've got kids who are coming to their parents who are like, I feel like we're speaking like 65-year-old. We're trying not to sound like really old here, but that's the reality, is that kids are getting this access to all this information at such a young age, partly because it's become accepted, but partly because if you don't have it, you won't keep up, and you'll
FOMO,
back to
favorite
FOMO.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is that though, isn't it? Yeah. It's the, I remember that the only way that I was able to get a phone is because I was like, oh, my friend Ben's got a phone, Mum. Like, can I have the Sendo? Sendo, have you ever
heard of Sendo?
You know, have you heard of Sendo? Doubt it.
But the repercussions of not having a Beyblade was so much more minimal than not having an iPhone.
Because it was, what, three or four friends?
It was three or four
friends. That you let
down? And as well, it was like, if you don't have a Beyblade, what's the impact on your actual life? Mm. There's none. If you have an iPhone, your world is just, it's gone from like this minute thing to massive. And you, like, going back to the header of this episode, accessibility and censorship, you have access to everything.
Literally everything. I mean, it scares me a lot because, I mean, I keep on thinking my sister's like 10 years old. She's 17 now. But I know that, you know, in 5 years or so, I'd like to have children. And I was on, again, just on a browser page before, and it took me like 3 clicks to get to a public execution. And there was nothing saying like, what you're about to see is, you know, disturbing. There was nothing where I had to verify my age. There was nothing restricting me from viewing that page, that video. And what's scary is that we go back, nearly a third of kids aged 8 to 10 have a phone. They can get on those websites very quickly. And that is terrifying for me. I would hate to think that my 7-year-old daughter can look at that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's enabling our younger children to access things that we didn't view until we were like, what, 18?
We were of an age that you weren't as impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of knew how the world worked, and you'd been raised. Like, I think the consensus, like, we're very lucky, the lads in our band and us, that we've had a very strong family influence from an early age, and we grew up in an era that wasn't so dominated by social media. Not that that's a bad thing. Like, maybe we missed out not being in an era that was so dominated by social media, but because of that, we were very family influenced, and we had our social groups around us, and that was our influences, and that's where you draw your moral compass, and that's where you build your personality from. And one of the things we keep saying is social media and is the internet becoming the third parent?
Yeah.
So you're building your moral compass, you're building everything that goes on to be your personality in later life off partly social media. And then it goes back to the validity of information on social media.
Yeah.
And like we say, you can't verify it. You can't stop a kid at the moment from being 3 clicks away from something as horrible as a public execution. And what effect does that have on their mental state? And how will it influence them moving forward? So, I mean, like we said in the beginning, this is a discussion. We don't know the answer to these things. But it's just scary to think that at a young age, between 8 and 10, 30% of kids are getting a phone, which will then ultimately affect the way that they view the world.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But what would you say to someone that comes along and says, the world is moving so fast technologically, what would you say if someone said, it's impossible to avoid it, and what would you say if someone said, what's the problem with that? Because you've said a couple of things, but would you rather, if you had a child now and he was 10, would you rather him not be on social media at all? Or not 10, but like, I don't know, 14.
Yeah.
What would you do if your son came to you and said, Brad, all of my friends are on social media, like they're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, all that. This is great. I'm missing out on this. What would you say now
to
them that once you're on social media at the age of 14, that's, you know, being victimized for not being on it?
Yeah. it's a hard one because I felt like in my, like growing up as a kid, you almost went through tiers that kind of preserved the ignorance of youth. So yeah. You kind of had this, and I think a lot of people of our age and above had that, where you were very much kept in your bubble of being a youthful person and a young person, and you weren't exposed to these things because people wanted you to enjoy the naivety of youth. And like I remember when computers got introduced at my school, it was like you'd learn about, there was like traffic lights, how to turn, it was like really weird, very basic stuff. And I think that preserved so that there was transitional stages within your life. And I think those things that were traditionally, like the exposure to, I don't know, safe sex, for example, like, which is quite a big topic to speak about. Yeah, the exposure of that is, there was a conversation about that when I was 16 at school.
And you heard that through your teacher before?
Through a viable source, through someone who had verified the information, and there was things, like verified information that went out to teachers that would then portray it in the best way possible to students so they could learn about it. Now, kids have got a phone and they know about those kind of things when they're like 11.
Before
that's
but, told and, it,
and, they? But they're not told it and they're not presented it in a way that is like, this is what it is, this is the repercussions of it, this is the benefits, this is the downsides. They're just given it and they're like almost told to formulate their own opinions, which you can't do. And like, I'm not trying to sound like a old man saying in my day, but like that is the general, that is what social media does.
There's and no information around it, is there? I was thinking just then, as you said that, it's like you go into like a lift, and instead of going to like the first floor, learning a bit, second floor through the years, you go straight to like the penthouse, and you're like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what's happening in wherever. This is what happens between a man and a woman. And you're like 10 years old, and you're like, what's that?
Yeah, and you don't know what to make from it.
No.
And this is where like, should how information is presented to kids in schools be applied to the internet? Should there be, like you say, should there be a first floor, a second floor? Should your age depict what you are allowed to see on social media?
Is that possible?
Is that possible? Like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? But but going back to the effect it has on them kids, I think it has that third parent thing that we all speak about.
Yeah, and it actually, I think it skews kind of one's perception of expectation with things. So, you know, I don't want to be like vulgar, but you look at adult videos, and that is the expectation for relationships. And a 14-year-old guy and a 14-year-old girl might look at that and think, that is what I want on the basis of my relationship. That is
that's how it's done.
Socially
that's
acceptable.
Yeah, yeah.
Reality is that is not true. It's actors. Or, you know, it's everything, isn't it? It's I mean, it's kind of relevant to what we were saying, expectation versus reality. But it kind of skews almost the morality of someone's perception of life by being susceptible to things before they are arguably capable of acknowledging and learning that. It's almost like they're being presented. They're like opening like Pandora's box at the wrong age, but what's inside is wrong. Like,
well, what's inside is just information. It's not it's not biased, it's not wrong, it's just information. So it's not like these kids are given the wrong stuff, the right stuff. They're just given it all.
Yeah.
So for them, it's like, I think it just entirely depends on, it's on a kid by kid basis, but like there's no verification, there's no like information stream online that is the right way to do it for young children. It's just information in your face, take from that for what you will, and that's where you can see people falling into the wrong, like going back to the friendship thing online, people can meet like-minded people online, but whether it's the right set of values, whether it's the right kind of views that people are falling into online, it's just, it's all there. It's an open.
There's no third party, is it? There's no like real life parents. You know, like when you bring like your, when you were like in first school, you bring like your friend back from school that you'd met, and it would, my mum's definitely, you know, this sort of person.
Big up, Gara.
Yeah, either lovely, great, great, wonderful, or like, oh, I'm not sure, I don't know. And it's like, and that sounds horrible because, you know, children are lovely, but like sometimes you don't gel with someone in the same way as others.
Yeah.
There's no third party there warning you or guiding you with these relationships online. Because if a kid's sat in his bedroom looking at something, there's no one there on his shoulder saying,
"That's not the right thing.
Oh, James, you shouldn't be looking at that at your age or at any age."
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of, they are the ones that are making their decisions, ill-informed decisions, perhaps far too young than when they should be. You know, I would say that no 7-year-old should be looking at things that are, you know, adult nature at all. Why? Like, what's the point?
On the flip side to that, though, I think the nature of the openness of social media has instigated a real accepting, like, the generation below us and our generation, I think, as well, are very, like, because of this access to information and this, like, diverse cultures that are all online, people are just exposed to it and they are told that it is, everything is equal and it's all the right way to be and there's no wrong or right. Yeah. So I actually think that, in fact, it implements less discrimination amongst younger generations, because they're just like, they're given this information and none of it is portrayed in a way that is bad because of maybe older generations perceiving certain colours, creeds, like sexual orientations to be the wrong way. Nothing is the wrong way on social media. So it means that these kids are seeing everything and there's a real lack of discrimination, which is amazing, I think. And I think it's so good that everyone's so open-minded and there's no small-minded nature and people are just given this platform that opens them up and says this is the world and this is how it works and don't think that there is a wrong and right. So on the flip side of this, maybe there should be an age at which people have presented that information, but the reality of the openness of information is that it doesn't discriminate.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like putting it to personal experience. You know, I was in my teens before I went, I grew up in Dorset, and for those who don't know, and in my teens it was, you know, it was a long time before I went to school with people from different ethnicities and different groups and different religions. You know, in first school, there'd be like a child that wouldn't sing in the hymns. And I had no idea. I was like, well, I don't know what this is. I've got no idea. And it was quite a negative environment for me because I, you know, I didn't know any better. But now my sister, who's whatever, 6 or 7 years younger than me, for the past 3 years or so, she's been completely open to different religions, races, you know, gender, sexuality, as you were saying. And that's, I think, educated her in a really good way in comparison to me. I was quite, sheltered from my, nothing against my parents, but just where I grew up and the lack of that kind of global acknowledgement and
diversity.
Yeah, and diversity. Yeah. I didn't know. So I think, you know, setting up our younger generations with that mindset of, people are different around the world. People are into different things. They look different. Social media has to be kind of given a bit of a pat on the back for that, because that it's definitely helped in that, you know. Like, my sister, you know, really into, you know, bands and guys that are like homosexual, for example. And when I was like 12, like I honestly didn't know about that. I just didn't. And I wish sometimes that I had had the education that social media had provided to me from an earlier age. So it's interesting just kind of flipping on its head, you know, and like, where do you draw the line of what's good and what's bad about social media?
I think that's a good place to end it.
Right, there you go.
Because I think these are conversations and these are subjects that we will chat about all day, but we don't know that much about.
No idea.
Moving forward, we will look to get people on who are very well informed and can make us all aware, the listeners, us two up here, and everyone. Yeah, hopefully we can look to learn together and move forward together. And I don't know if there is an answer to any of the questions that we're posing.
Who knows?
But at least we can gain an understanding.
We encourage people to tweet in, obviously, as well, because like, if anything that we've spoken about here spurred a thought or you want to comment, then make sure to tweet us at How Little We Know. And we'll definitely kind of relook at kind of the tweets and stuff in the next episode for this episode. We kind of want this to be a fluid transition between episodes, in the hope that throughout the series we're able to kind of open up the conversation with you guys, because that's the whole idea of this. We want to kind of get your opinion and learn
together.
Yes. So a massive thank you to Dean Sherwood for being here behind the camera for however long this is. A massive thanks to Rode Microphones for picking up our voices. And who else should we thank?
Airbnb for providing this lovely location.
We good?
Thank you very much. Thank you, James McVeigh.
Thank you, Bradley Simpson.
This has been How Little We Know. We hope you've enjoyed it. Remember to tweet in and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.